What's going on, guys? Welcome back. Droid Life show today. Kind of a special show, but it is episode 110. We're recapping Google I.O., which, of course, took place last week. It is May 23rd, a Monday. So not a normal Friday, but there's just so much to talk about after traveling back from San Francisco and all that we needed to do a show. So on this episode, we really are going to run through almost everything that we learned at Google I.O., different sort of Google I.O., but tons and tons and tons of stuff. I've seen some people talk about it might have been boring, and I don't really get the feeling that it was boring. Like, there was cool stuff. We just didn't necessarily get new toys to play with, which is a little bit different. But anyways, we're going to talk latest in Android N, Google Home and Assistant and Allo and Duo and Daydream and VR and Chromebooks with Android apps and ATAP and Wear and Auto and TV. I mean, there's so much stuff. So we'll try not to make this like a 3-hour show. So we'll try to go through this quickly. We've obviously got more detailed write-ups on all the stuff that we're going to talk about. So if you missed anything or you want to know more, just go back to the site and find the topic. We got all sorts of stuff written up. So anyways, I guess like Google, I'll come back to why I was talking about it being boring or a different show. And so they announced all of that stuff I just mentioned. Oh, sorry. Tim's with me, by the way. I'm counting.
Hey guys, how's it going? Tim here.
Sorry, there's just so much going on in my mind right now. I'm like forgetting intros and everything. Anyway, so Tim and I were there last week at I.O. And we're now back after spending a whole bunch of time down in Palo Alto and Mountain View and all over the place. So Google I.O. takes place. It's outdoor. So number one, it's an outdoor venue, Shoreline Amphitheater, Google's backyard, basically, and which is different in and of itself. They announce all this stuff, though, right? So we got the N and Home and Assistant, and there was products like with them, except everything that Google announced was like, here's a new product. Here's a teaser for our new product. You just don't get it yet. So I think that's why it was so different to a lot of people, is normally it's like, here's a new product, new version, software, whatever, go get it now, buy it now, pre-order now, something. And the whole event was basically, here's this new sweet project we're working on. You can't have it now. You can maybe get it this fall or later this year or whatever. So it was different in that sense. It's almost like Google took this year's I.O. and made it a preview show of a later event. Like, I get the feeling now we're going to get a really, really, really big fall event. Like, when they announce Android N, or make it, I should not announce it, when they make it stable and public, they're going to go like one or two Nexus devices, Google Home. They're going to ship Assistant then. We might get Allo and Duo, and they might have their VR headset, and there'll be like a new Chromebook Pixel or something. Like, I just get the feeling that this was a preview to massive craziness this fall.
And I would totally agree with you.
Yeah, doesn't it feel like Google's become, I mean, they've always kind of had, well, I shouldn't say always. Last year, they did a two-event thing, right? They did I.O., and then they did the fall Nexus launch event. But now it feels like they're preparing for that. Like, they did one I.O. May, then like September, it's just going to be massive product launch. And it could be, I mean, that could be a good schedule each year if you can manage that, right? I mean, those are kind of some big expectations to live up to, but you go preview, launch, just over and over and over.
They certainly have set the table for that. You know, talking about the changes that are coming to Android N, you know, they have sort of opened the door for, you know, new tablets with the multi-window aspect of Android N. Of course, new phones or phone. Don't know if it's plural yet. And then also, you know, with the changes coming to the Chromebook stuff. But all of this stuff is not happening, they said, until Q3 or summer or the fall. I mean, it's coming later. So everyone's getting hype. The train is starting to take off. And, well, it's already been taken off. But, I mean, yeah, Google has set the table. That's my point. Set the table.
Yes, they have. This could be one of their biggest years, I think, in terms of product launches we've ever seen. I mean, I know we got two Nexus phones last year, and we got new Chromecast, I think. That was last year, right? New Chromecast, Chromecast Audio. But, I mean, because, which we'll get to, the Chromebooks and Android apps, so we could see bigger, better Chromebooks, the new forms, and then we have their VR stuff, and then they have Google Home now, plus Nexus. Like, they have all this stuff coming. And so that's why I think it's weird that like I've seen some people just kind of go, Google I.O. was kind of boring this year. And I'm just thinking, it really wasn't when you look into the future just a little bit. Like, look beyond the instant satisfaction of today. And if you look to tomorrow, there's some crazy stuff coming, which is going to be awesome. It's just going to make this fall awesome, right? Like, right when the iPhone 7 launches, Google's going to release like 8 products. It's going to be kind of crazy.
It is pretty good. Yeah. It's always kind of nice because when Apple announces their iPhone, the Android ecosystem, or, you know, Google and all of us fanboys are like, we're justified in all of the hate we sort of like lay into them, because it's like, look at all the stuff that they're introducing for iOS users, like years after Android has it. I mean, it's been like that for a while now. Like, iPhone has its innovations here and there, but, you know, Tim Cook and whoever else is going to get on stage, throw out numbers, these huge, huge numbers. And they're great, they're fantastic, but Google is definitely, they've sort of just taken the smartphone show, I would say, or at least Android. So, I mean, so many users, so many different devices coming from, and they're all like really good devices. We've had a ton of good phones, like HTC. I'm not going to say they're back, but HTC's back with a 10. I mean, there's actually a lot of good stuff to be excited about this year, and we're not even really into it yet. It's still only mid-May. So we still have Motorola, the Nexus phones, OnePlus, and their stuff. It's good. Good times are ahead.
Yeah, for sure. So, all right. So let's just start going through this stuff, right?
Down the list.
Yeah, this is not in order as it arrived, but we'll just kind of go through it. So Android N, not a ton of new announcements around Android N. We didn't get a name, but Google is going to let the people sort of share their ideas. So Google's been, they've kind of been teasing us with this like Android name, Android N name for a while, basically since the first preview was out a couple of months ago. But what they're actually going to let you suggest names for. They said they're having a difficult time, blah, blah, blah. It's just all hype leading up to something that they've probably already decided on, but they're actually letting you name it. So what is it, like android.com/n or something? Yeah. So if you go to android.com/n, you can suggest names and it'll say thank you for the suggestion. That's pretty much it. But at least they're making or letting us feel a little bit like we're a part of it, even though I don't know if we really are. Right. Outside of that, they did release Developer Preview 3, and they called it the first beta. So it's actually interesting. The second Preview 2, I believe, was called a beta. And they kind of backed it back to an alpha because they released DP3 and they said, this is actually a beta and it's actually pretty stable. You could use it if you want to. And they made it available instantly, OTA and factory images. I mean, it was just popping. I actually updated my Nexus 6 during the keynote. That's how quickly they made it available. I've been running on Nexus 6, which was a little buggy for me, but I've been on the 5X basically since I got back home. So all weekend, and I haven't really had any issues. What's crazy is we talked about the 5X during the review period, how laggy and janky it was and how almost unusable it was at times. I've been on the N Preview 3 with it for 3 days now. No lag, no jank. So it was true. The 5X could be fixed by software. So,
wow.
Yeah, so not a lot of new there. It's just stable. They've tweaked some little things here and there. Like, it came with Google Keyboard 5.1, which has themes and colors and stuff, which is kind of fun, but there aren't any big forward-facing changes. They did toss in Android VR on the back end, but the 6P, I believe, is the only phone that can take advantage of it, right? And I don't even know if it can take advantage of it right now. It's just built in. So,
right, yeah, the support only for the 6P at this time.
Yeah. So that's Android N. I mean, not really a lot to talk about there, but if you do have a Nexus device that's supported, feel free to flash it and use it. I mean, they said on stage, this is mostly stable. And if you want to use it as your daily device or daily software on your daily device, go for it. So let's see. So let's go into Google Home and Google Assistant then, because these two kind of go together, right? So do you want to take us through, well, which one do you want to do first? Because they announced Assistant first, but Assistant is a big part of Home.
Yeah, I feel like we should talk about Assistant first, sort of what Google Home is based around.
Okay, so do you want to go through sort of the idea of Assistant? It's basically kind of taking over for now in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's sort of like a rebranding where, so Google Now, is now really just known as Google. It is just Google. It's more of like an enhanced search. But Google Assistant makes it more personalized, even more contextually aware, if you will. So, for example, if you want to go to a movie, you can say, hey, Google, or okay, Google, what movies are playing? It'll show you a preview of the shows, but then you can just ask a specific question regarding the results that were returned to you. And then you can say, buy two tickets to The Jungle Book at 7:30. And it can do that thanks to linked accounts, which you will. They didn't specify during the keynote like who you're buying the tickets through, most likely like Fandango or something. But it seems that Google is going to open up to sort of like third-party APIs that will allow that sort of integration. So that'll be sweet. In addition, I'm trying to think of more use cases that sort of like makes it sound how personal right. it is. But the fact is, it's a more personalized Google search engine just for you. And so when it'll be your assistant, so kind of like Siri or Alexa from Echo, but instead of based on Apple's or Amazon services, it's Google services. So it'll be tied into everything you already have. So Google Play Music or Play Movies or other services that you have on Google, that'll all be tied in. I'm trying to explain it. It's not very, like, it's Google now, but more personalized, right? I mean, and smarter.
Apparently. Yeah, so more natural. The conversation between you and Google, more natural. They're probably going to build in some new, just better actions too. Like, okay, Google, take a selfie, things like that. But yeah, not a ton has changed, but they're just going to try to make it more of like a conversational UI, I think, too. Assuming what they were showing up on the screen is how it's sort of going to look if you're in the Google app. But yeah, it's tough to come up with a bunch of ideas unless they tell us really how that third-party interaction stuff is going to work.
Right. I had someone in the chat say that the movie stuff was powered by Bandango and not Fandango, although I think he just misspelled Fandango. But yeah, so I think the possibilities are great, especially when you're talking about bringing that to Google Home, which was that sort of side-by-side announcement that they talked about right after they announced Google Assistant. Although, you know, I read somewhere that, you know, the name is not actually Google Assistant. It'll just remain Google, but sort of the consumer will have the idea that Google Assistant is inside of Google. It's kind of like I don't think Google was really clear enough on what exactly they were announcing
over and over and over again.
Right. So it's a little odd, but I think it'll just be Google.
Yeah. I mean, it's just going to be Google. Like when we get to Allo and we talk about that, like when you talk to it, you're talking to Google. You're not talking to Google Assistant.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So you want to talk about Home then?
Absolutely. That's the thing I am most excited about. And I think I sort of share the same feelings with everyone. I think we did a poll on like the biggest announcement from IO. And so Google Home definitely took the crown.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of it was one of the products they actually were able to show off hardware for, right?
Right.
They walk out on stage and say, and this leaked the day before. Well, people have been talking about Chirp, which is the code name for Google Home. And then the day before, was it New York Times, Wall Street Journal? One of those two said it's going to be called Google Home and it's going to be shown off tomorrow at I.O. And sure enough, it's called Google Home and they showed hardware. And it's kind of it's not like a cone style. How do you describe I think it looks like an air freshener, but.
Yeah, it looks like an air freshener. I mean, it looks like a mix of, it's like a bigger Febreze thing that you stick into the wall or whatever. And an Amazon Echo, really. It's a bit smaller than an Echo, though. It's still like tubular, cylinder shaped.
Yeah, it's got that sort of roundish shape, but it's kind of got a slanted point to it on the top.
It's got a fatter base. Yeah. Where it kind of like, yeah, I don't know. Looks like one of those those Russian boxes, things, toys that you put inside one another. Kind of looks like
just keep stacking on each other. Yeah. So yeah, maybe that's what Google's going for, is to create a shape that doesn't exist so that we can't explain what this is. But think of Amazon Echo with the speaker built in and all that fun stuff, but in Google's own weird shape with a flat top that's sort of angled. Anyway, so it's called Google Home and it is indeed sort of like Amazon Echo, and you can talk to it and say, okay, Google, and ask it questions, and it's powered by Google and or the assistant or whatever the hell we want to say. And you can track your packages. So it basically takes the Google Now stream you have on your phone, and you can have it tell you that information. You track packages, directions, check on your calendar, have it order you stuff, I would imagine. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff you're going to be able to do with this, play music in one room or the other. I thought one of the cool things, well, obviously it'll connect to your home, right? And they showed this sort of intro video where they said, like, I think the father was in like the kitchen and he was trying to wake the kids up around the house. And he was like, turn music on in this room, you know, to wake up one kid. And then it was like, turn it on in this other room. The kid didn't wake up. So then he said, like, turn the lights on. And so he was standing in his kitchen and he was commanding his house through Google Home, which is kind of, I think, the eventual vision. Now, obviously, people need to build products that work with it. And Google says that's going to happen. And so it could act as this hub for your home where it looks pretty and it sits on a shelf and you talk to it, and you could have multiple throughout your house, or you just have it control everything else in your house. It looks awesome. And it's, again, one of those products that they don't have really that much to announce about right now, other than it's coming later. Did they say Q3 on this one too, or did they just say later this year?
Yeah, I think they said by Q3. I think for this one, they said fall.
Okay.
In particular.
So, yeah, it's Google's Amazon Echo thing, which people have been talking a lot about. Although it, you know, it looks a little better in my opinion. Like, Amazon Echo is just this metallic black tall tube. This thing has a little more character to it. And they said you can change the color and base and make it look a different way so it matches maybe your sort of style of your home. But it seems to be like already, if it does half the stuff they showed in that video, that it's going to be more powerful out of the box than Amazon Echo has been after 2 years of being alive.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm getting from it. You know, like where Amazon has had to build in all of the cool stuff from launch, it looks like Google Home is just going to launch with all that great stuff. I mean, being able to connect all the different house stuff, right? Like your Nest thermostat they showed, like when you say, okay, Google, or goodbye Google, the house shuts down, the Nest thermostat turns to away, lights turn off, TV turns off. That's really cool. And I think a lot of people will get in on that, especially if the price is reasonable. And since it's Google, and I don't really know if Google cares so much about making money off of hardware, where not that they're going to be serving ads through Google Home, but just the fact that Google has shown that I don't think they're trying to make a killing off of hardware. Right. So I think it'll be set at a good price, although we have no idea about that. But from what I've seen, the video and what they showed off at Google I.O., I'll be throwing my Echo like in a box,
yeah, pretty much, or
giving it to whoever really wants it. Something. I mean, I just won't pretty be much. Using it anymore because right. This has all of Google services. I can play my music from Play Music, all that good stuff. I don't have to deal with Amazon's crap Prime Music, and it'll be so good
when that'll be over. Nice. And like I said, I personally like the look of Google Home better than Amazon Echo.
Yeah, the LED lights that are on top giving off the Google colors, I think it looks great.
It looks pretty cool. The other thing I forgot that they showed, which was awesome, was, and I think the video, we have it embedded in our post on our write-up of it, but the guy says something like, cast this to the TV or something. So all voice commanded, just play something on my TV and it does it. Who knows how fast that'll be or what exactly the command will be, but that's cool. Cause right now, you know, if I want to play, like something from Google Play Music on my phone through a speaker in my house that has a, you know, a cast dongle, I don't know that I can do that with my voice, right? I guess I haven't actually tried that, but I don't think I can say connect to the bookshelf and play this, but you're going to be able to do that with Google Home, which is a big deal.
It is a big deal.
And just that whole voice control of your house is a big deal, yeah.
Right. It's definitely like the first step towards like that entire home automation. And I'm like, we've seen, I mean, I see it more so like at CES, right? Like sort of like the trend in the industry, like everything was drones and then everything was home automation. And then everything was about taking the smart tech into cars. So, I mean, really, it's like the first step towards a better automated home platform. And I think Google would be a good company to sort of lead that charge because, I mean, as we see at I.O., I mean, there's plenty of developers who want to get in on this stuff. So, and not just like software developers, but hardware makers too. Mm-hmm. So I think we're in for some good times as long as you've got the money you know, to spend, if you got $300 to drop on Philips Hue's lights and stuff, then you're in for a treat. But if you're still rocking incandescent bulbs, then you're sort of out of luck.
It's one of those things I've thought about is I'm one of the people that jumps on all the smart home products or whatever early. And I probably did it too early, right? I made this early investment in some of these things. And by the time Google Home comes around and Apple probably comes out with something similar, I'm going to have to rebuy everything because none of this old stuff probably will play nicely with it, which kind of sucks.
Yeah,
I mean, your Nest is probably fine.
But. Yeah, your Nest is probably fine. Anything that's sort of like that Google has purchased over the past 2 years, probably okay. Yeah. But yeah, the anyone who invested in Samsung smart things may be sort of getting like a raw end of the deal, but we'll see.
We'll see. Maybe they'll work with it as well.
That'd be tight. They
would be smart too. So
it would be smart.
So let's see. So that's Google Home. So any guess on price? What do you think that little home guy is going to go? What does the Amazon Echo cost these days? 180 or something like that?
No, I think they dropped it to like 120 or something, 130.
That's 180. $179.99, yeah.
Even for Prime members?
Yep.
All right, well, that's crazy. So I'm thinking Google Home is going to be $149 to $199. Somewhere in there.
I think I would lean towards more $199, maybe even $249.
That's pushing it.
What are the...
It's small, right?
I mean, on-hub routers. Yeah, but it's got a nice speaker in it. They're going to say it has all this new technology. And
yeah, but it's not a Wi-Fi router. I mean, it's not a lot of things. And the speaker, like the audio, can't be that good in a little thing. Right. So it's no way it's going to be $99. Someone in the chat is saying, I'm guessing $99. There's no way. That's like too cheap. So $150. Or 200, 199. That seems like the go-to price.
I could see 200. So the two on-hub routers, they are $200. And they don't have nice speakers or some of that fancy tech that they showed off in there.
Right. But Google Home is not a Wi-Fi router, a smart Wi-Fi router. So it'll just be more. $199 or $149.
Yeah. I could see right around there. Yeah.
Up, $175.
Up to $249 if they really want to make a buck off it.
They don't want to make a buck. So they have different options, right, for the body. It's not just that one option. You can go different materials on it or whatever. And then so one's white, the other one's black, I think, and different color bases. It does look like a Febreze, but
it does.
Yeah, I think. And then in the future, sort of like what they do for the on-hub stuff, you know, maybe there will be different skins for it. Like you could get a real wood skin. I'm sure D-Brand or Slick Wraps will make something silly for it. I
can't give them any more free shout-outs.
But the point is, it looks pretty good, and I'm super stoked for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'll be sweet. But yeah, we have to wait. It's just like Google's testing all of our patience.
Yeah, typical.
So, yeah. All right. So yeah, so that's Google Home and Assistant, I'm looking at the press overview that they sent us and it says the Google Assistant, but then throughout it, they kind of call it the Google Assistant, but they're not necessarily naming it. It's almost like they're saying there's an assistant within Google. So just call it Google, even though it's called the Assistant.
Right.
It's just kind of confusing.
It is.
Because yeah, it says, like the first line in this press thing for the Google Home, it says, when you walk in the door of your house, you should continue to have access to the Google Assistant. But they're not capitalizing Assistant as if it's just a nameless thing. Whatever. We'll move on. All right. So I would say after those two things, and this also relates a little bit to Assistant, Google announced Allo and Duo. So two new apps. One is a messaging app. That's Allo. And one is a video chat app, and that's Duo. So also coming soon, not available now. Allo in particular works with the Assistant. So just we back up for a second. So Allo and Duo, again, these two new apps. Allo is the messaging side, which I think is kind of the bigger subject. Duo is a one-on-one video app, and it looks fine, and it's end-to-end encrypted, blah, blah, blah. You guys have seen video chat apps. But with Allo, you get essentially Google's take on a WhatsApp Messenger client, I would say. So instead of it being tied to your Google account, it requires you to register with your phone number. So you register with your phone number, all your family and friends register with their phone number, again, sort of like WhatsApp. And then you get this full-blown messaging application. And you do group chats and blah, 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 and send pictures. And it tries to sort of keep the conversation going at times by thinking ahead what you might say so you can respond quicker. It's got emoji, and you can drag the slider when you on the send button to make stuff louder or more quiet. And for some reason, everyone thought that was really cool. And I just can't imagine why that's so cool. But so the Google Assistant is going to be built into Allo. So even though it doesn't ask for your Google account, which is interesting, does that mean you're going to, I'm just wondering, but are you going to have to, you're going to have to register with a Google account at some point, right? I don't think they've said this, but how is it going to keep learning all of your Google stuff if you don't give it access? So basically they're going to set it up with a phone number and everyone's going to go, yeah, it doesn't need Google. But if you want to get any sort of power out of the thing, you're going to have to use your Google account.
I don't know. Well, they didn't really specify that it learns or anything. I mean, the Google Assistant could just be sort of a, you know, when you say, oh, hey, where's that lunch spot you were talking about or whatever, and that's where Assistant comes in. You can say, oh, it shows you the address, and then you can book reservations from it, and then it may ask for a Google account or just like an email or something. We don't know, right? They didn't really specify. But as far as the way I see it, I'm not really seeing the necessity to log in with a Google account to use the app or to really get the full power of Google Assistant from it.
I would just think you would need that. Like, say if you want to talk to it about flight reservations, sure, restaurant reservations, any of that stuff, that's all attached to your Google account. So in that order stuff, to pull that stuff.
Yeah. More personal information like that. Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. But you should be able to use it technically without a Google account. But so it looks like a really nicely laid out chat app. It is, I mean, you guys know what a messaging app is, right? But so then they built in stuff where you send somebody a picture, and it could be a picture of tacos, and there'll be a response that says, those tacos look yummy or something like that, right? So it's using machine learning, and it's looking at your conversation and pictures and all this stuff. And like you said, you bring up a restaurant, could pop up reservation options, all that stuff, right? So it's this incredibly smart messaging app on top of just being a messaging app. But again, it's not available, so we can't even really dive into how it works and what's going on because, well, we don't really have that. One thing that's kind of been making the rounds is if you wanted to have end-to-end encryption, there's an incognito mode, which you can enable to have your conversations be fully encrypted. Unfortunately, I don't think that means you get the full power of the Google Assistant and all of that stuff. So your conversations, I believe, are still encrypted to a certain extent without incognito mode, but it's not the full end-to-end encryption. So anyway, sort of controversial to privacy enthusiasts around. It looks like a nice app. I want to use it. We know it's not going to be it's not killing Hangouts, in case you were wondering. Hangouts is still a Google required sign-in type of app, so Hangouts is not going anywhere. This is just another messaging app from Google. So if you decide Allo looks like the next best thing, you're going to have to convince all of your family and friends to sign up for it when it comes out.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to go back sort of towards the automated response feature that it has. So, for example, when someone sends a picture, yeah, tacos. But the one example they gave was a dog, and then there was three responses that it suggested for you. One was cute dog, one was aw, and the other one was nice Burmese mountain dog. So the Google read the picture, analyzed it, noticed that it was a Burmese mountain dog specifically, and then gave that reply to you. It recommends that reply. When someone says, oh, nice Burmese mountain dog, it just doesn't come off as natural, right? Google wants to make its computer sound more smarter contextual. You're like, you just wouldn't write out, oh, nice Burmese mountain dog. That's ridiculous. Who would say that?
I don't know.
Nice dog.
Nice flank steak tacos.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, nice polo taco there, por favor. Right? You know, it just doesn't come off as natural to me. But that's another thing. You know, a lot of different people use their messaging apps for different ways. So the idea that maybe you're not incognito and, you know, you're sending your girlfriend or something like some special pictures or something. And then maybe it, like, one of the auto replies is, oh, nice private parts. You know, it just seems odd that Google has the ability to read these things. And yeah, as someone who's not overly concerned with privacy and things like that, like, I could see how other people would sort of freak out by this. Like, oh yeah, Google is actually now really reading your messages. And I'm sure they would say it's totally protected. Like, no end person is seeing what you're actually sending or something, but a computer is. Like, Skynet is seeing what I'm sending. And that for me is enough to be worried. So
what privacy people are worried about is when you murder someone and the FBI wants to come knock on Google's door to get your conversations, they won't be fully encrypted, right? So Google can hand that to them because, you know, murderers need to have full protection at all times.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, that's a different story, but
yeah, that's a totally different conversation.
Yeah. Just the fact that, okay, Google, your computers, they're still too robotic in their automated responses. Like, oh, cute dog and aw, that's good. But then when it takes that next step in recognizing what the picture actually is of and sort of tries to tailor a message specifically for that photo, that's not very human. So, but beyond that, I'm with you. I definitely want to try the app. I am not a WhatsApp user. I might be one of the only 7 billion people on the planet who doesn't use WhatsApp.
I'm number two.
Okay, so there's two people on the planet that don't use WhatsApp. I'm not even remotely interested to even try it. Like, I don't care about it.
Yeah,
but
as garbage as Hangouts is, it's gotten better.
Exactly. We're definitely like the West Coast weirdos where no one in California, Oregon, or Washington uses WhatsApp. But East Coast people, European, over in Asia, they all love WhatsApp. So I don't really necessarily need Allo. Like, I don't need a messenger tied to my phone number. Like, I like IMs. I think it's quicker, more efficient, and I don't have to worry about like text messaging rates or any weird stuff like that. Like, it's just data. So
I'm sure this is treated as data. I don't think
I'm sure it is too. Yeah, I'm sure it is too. It's just sort of like my thing. Like, I don't care about texting.
Well, and for you and I, and this is obviously a problem not that many have, is we use Google Voice. And a lot of times these apps, like, I think WhatsApp struggles to register with a Google Voice number. Mm. And so Google will hopefully figure that out here with Allo, since Google Voice is one of their services. But the registering a number thing, and if Google Voice doesn't, my Google Voice number won't register. I have to use some random phone number. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's kind of a pain in the ass. So
absolutely.
It is coming this summer on Android and iOS. Yep. Yeah. So back to the encrypted stuff. Google handed us this little Q&A thing. And it says, all messages in Allo will be encrypted, and messages in Incognito are end-to-end encrypted. So there's some level of encryption everywhere all the time.
Yikes.
Let's see. We didn't mention this either, but one of the big deals with Google and the assistant being built in is you bring Google into your conversations. Talk about privacy, right? So basically you add, like, if you want to add a member to your group conversation and you want it to be Google, you just add at Google and then you ask Google questions or whatever. So you can ask Google what sports scores are, find reservations, whatever. And so you bring Google in your conversation, kick Google out probably when you're done, or you can do that one-on-one. It's a pretty unique app, that's for sure. And the fact that you bring the Google Assistant in, one of the things that it kind of brings, that Gboard, remember iOS Gboard, which we, everyone kind of freaked out a bit. So this is kind of like that. So instead of just tapping on a Google button to do Google searches, like you can within Gboard, you just bring Google into the conversation. So, it's almost like Gboard, but it's a whole separate messaging app. So I think we're still getting
cool. Yeah, it's definitely cool. I give Google credit for coming up with things that no one really asked for, but I don't think it's really going to be huge, widely adopted. Like, I don't see this being like the next big thing. But
it's tough to beat, right? As another messaging app. I mean, you just said how many billions of people are already using WhatsApp, which in a way is kind of like this. And who could also probably introduce some of these features? Obviously, the Google tie-in stuff they can't do, but it's like Google, it's got Hangouts users, and now it wants even more users. And so in order to do that, maybe it feels like taking the WhatsApp approach where you use a phone number is the way to do that. Not really sure, but
Yeah, Google should have just worked with Apple to make like an iMessage Android app, and that would have just solved everything. Then the whole world can just use iMessage, and all of the world's problems would be solved.
As sad as that is, it really would fix a lot of our problems.
Yeah,
that's really sad. Let's see. Well, so I mentioned Hangouts is not dying. Google says we're still fully invested there, and you know, Hangouts has gotten better. It's still not my favorite app, but it works just fine now. I don't have that many issues with it.
Eh.
I just want to be able to swipe out the menu while I'm in a conversation. That's all.
I totally agree. I think Hangouts is just sort of like, it's sort of lackluster for what it should be, right? I mean, this is Google's IM app, and it's just boring and just not that good. It could be better. It needs chat heads for one.
Well, it's a bit frustrating when they build out brand new messaging apps like Allo and put in all these new features in it, and Hangouts is like, eh, what are we?
It's the stepchild now, the redheaded stepchild.
It is. I kind of feel like it has been almost since it was released. But
yeah, and Google Voice is getting treated even more unfairly. So Hangouts users, they have nothing much to complain about. So
yeah, how many years into Hangouts and Google Voice becoming one are we? It's like long. 4 years, isn't it? I think it's like 3 to 4 years. And Google Voice still exists, and it's still complete garbage because they just won't update it or make it better. At this point, I just wish they would say, screw this double integration and just improve Hangout or Voice. Redo the app so it looks nice. I feel like it's buggy as hell. Anyway, another conversation too.
Yeah.
Let's see. So Google announced their VR platform, which they're calling Daydream, not Android VR. Well, they're kind of calling it Android VR and Daydream, right? Either way, it's Daydream, and that's not the same as the screensaver thing we got back in Ice Cream Sandwich or Jelly Bean or something like that. Yeah. Daydream's now retired, but it's been reborn as virtual reality, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you want to walk through Daydream? What are we expecting with Daydream?
Yeah, definitely. Daydream is Android VR, essentially. It's Google's platform for virtual reality on Android devices specifically for it. So Daydream is the platform that is built into Android N. So when you have an Android N device, Daydream should work as long as the phone has the right requirements. And Google stated on stage that they are working with many partners, Samsung, et cetera, to create these devices that are Daydream ready. So basically, at least from what I see, Daydream is a lot like Gear VR, where you'll slap the phone into a headset. Google made a reference. So they made a reference design that apparently they will be making, but already like companies like Huawei and I think LG confirm that they will be creating a VR headset based on Google's design. So what you'll do, it's just like your VR. You got your Android phone, you stick it into the headset. It pretty much does all the power. It's the display you see, and then through the little opticals, the lenses, you will have your VR experience. So what Google is having to do is pretty much create everything from the ground up for VR. All of their apps, at least their big apps. So YouTube is getting rebuilt for VR. Google Play is getting rebuilt for VR. But in addition, they also, the big thing that Samsung has not done is that Google created a controller. So one of the reasons why Vive is such a fun VR experience is because there's these really good controllers for it, and you can actually kind of interact with the world and not just look at it. So Google does have a controller, at least in mind, for Daydream. So that's definitely a big plus, at least in my mind. Other than that, you'll pretty much see a lot of the same stuff. So like Google Street View, which has always been one of those VR experiences they sort of tout as cool, but I just see it as I'm looking at a street. I don't think it's all that cool, but more games. I mean, now that Google is sort of on board and they have like their army of developers that will be making sweet stuff, I bet we can expect to see a lot of very cool virtual reality experiences in the months and years to come, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, now that they're fully behind and they're not just doing cardboard, they've created a reference design for actual hardware that's like the Gear VR, and they're building their own and everyone else is building it. VR will be on, assuming you buy a new flagship basically going forward, it's going to be compatible. Right. Like, what did they say? The Nexus 6P is the, one of the first devices to support it. So that's Quad HD, Snapdragon 810. It's not even an 820, and it still, you know, fits the parameters. So as long as you have a next-gen device flagship bought within the last year, you're probably going to be fine. Well, I should say going forward.
Yeah, most definitely.
So, I mean, for in terms of VR, if you're interested at all in VR, this is big news. I mean, it's Google standing behind VR. Obviously, Samsung pushed, got it out of the gate, you know, gave it a big push. You had Gear VR, and they're working with Oculus, and they have games and apps and stuff like that. This should just make it blow up quicker, I would think, especially if they're working with all these partners and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see if it's if the experience is amazing. We talked about this a week or so ago. So obviously I have Vive and I have Gear VR. So I've used them both. And when you go from Vive to Gear VR, the experience is just, I mean, it's night and day difference, right? And we're talking about a phone versus a high powered PC. So I get that they're different, but the smartphone version of VR after you've used something like Vive is just not that exciting. But maybe Google's will be a little bit better. Maybe they've improved, I don't know, the frame rates and things like that. So it'll work even better, and the experience will be more immersive and smoother and all of that. But then, yeah, you mentioned they have the remote that they're building. So Samsung's has the little tap thing on the side of the, it's like a D-pad, basically a touch pad on the side of the headset, which is about the worst location. Google actually creating a little controller so you can go fishing or play tennis or, you know, whatever. You actually have a remote you can move around and stuff. Could make it pretty cool. So, and who knows, maybe they'll create a way where you can pair two of them and really go at it, do a boxing game or something. I don't know. Either way, big start for VR from Google anyway. So that stuff all also kind of coming later. So the VR portion, which they're calling VR mode, is baked into Android N. So when that releases to stable, that's when that'll come out. So when that comes out, I would expect a headset. So that's obviously not until the end of the summer. So you don't really get much now. It's another one of those products where they showed us a bunch of cool stuff and then they said, okay, it's coming soon though.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely like the big talking point of IO. It's like, yeah, they announced all this cool stuff, yet we get nothing. So it's just is what it is.
Yeah, it's what it is. We'll survive. And look, they're giving us a preview of all this stuff. So
yeah.
Let's see.
Live with it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. In terms of the VR stuff. Yeah. So anyway, we'll get there and we'll see if it's cool or not. In news that I personally think is huge, Chromebooks are now getting Android apps, getting Google Play Store. So this was rumored a couple of weeks ago. Like somebody popped up on their Chromebook device. They must have been running a dev build is all I can say, or all I can think. But there was a box that said, like, check this for Android app access. And everyone went, well, we don't have that. And Google's never mentioned that. So they did announce it at I.O. And they basically held a special session. Why they didn't do this on stage during the keynote is still beyond, I do not understand what that. But they basically held a session, and they held back announcing the session until the morning of the day they were going to announce it. And they didn't let any developers into this session, which, again, this is a developer conference. So a bunch of us press crammed in this little session room, and they walk through Android apps on Chromebook. So they're getting Google Play Store. That means all the access to all the millions of apps through there. And they said there should all just basically work. And they're giving developers some tips on how to make their apps work better and things like that, which is a big deal. But, you know, you get like three window sizes for your apps. You get bigger versions, it's like tablet versions almost. They run in Windows. They just run with Chrome OS. I just think it's huge because it makes Chrome OS. Well, I talked about how I think it's basically Chromebooks killing the tablet, because I just don't think you need a tablet anymore when you can just buy a cheap $250 Chromebook that runs Android apps and run all your Android apps and do the productive side that a normal computer could do. And so I think this is huge news. And I picked up a brand new Chromebook Pixel, and it actually just showed up. It's right there because it's going to be one of the first to run Android apps. Tim's got one coming, so he can get it loaded up and we can start testing. And maybe we'll start talking more about Chromebooks now that they run Android apps. So in mid-June, there's going to be a new dev build that'll come out with support for it on three devices, the Pixel, the Flip, and the R11 or something like that. You can buy all three of those devices at the Google store. And then later this fall, when it launches into stable, it's going to hit like dozens of Chromebooks. So if you own a Chromebook and you bought one in the last year, there's probably a pretty good chance that it'll be running Android apps pretty soon, which is a pretty big deal. So I don't know. I'm excited.
I'm super excited. I mean, like you said, you wrote up a whole thing on how Chromebooks are killing the Android tablet, which I see is a good thing. I mean, I've been talking smack about Android tablets now for a couple of years just because I think they're really boring, and I don't even think multi-window in Android N is really going to save them. Because, I mean, we've had access to multi-window from Samsung tablets, and those still aren't very cool. So and
their multi-window is a little more advanced than even Google's.
Right. So. Absolutely. So a lot of different resizing options, and you can have actually more than just two windows. I mean, you can have pages and little bubbles of apps floating around everywhere on a Samsung phone. Definitely, they've come a long way with their tech.
Yeah.
So what I plan on doing with this little Chromebook that I'm getting the Flip, I think, which is sort of like it's almost like a Surface, like where you can rip it off. You just can't rip it off. That's the only difference, I think.
You can flip it all the way backwards or something, can't you?
Yeah, and sort of make it like a really thick tablet. But so, I mean, I just plan on having it sort of like on the coffee table. So, you know, if I want to do my browsing stuff, that's totally fine with Chrome OS. But then, you know, the ability to have access to Android apps will just make it that much sweeter. I think, you know, I have a bigger screen to play with stuff instead of doing everything on my phone. So I see this as a really big thing for Chromebooks, especially with the Chromebook sales numbers just going like up and up and up. I mean,
yeah. So Google announced at I/O that Chromebook sales have surpassed in the last quarter, surpassed Mac sales. Crazy. So for the first time, so they are running around telling everyone they're number two in terms of PC sales right now, which is kind of funny because I'm sure Apple has an event coming up soon and they're not going to want to talk about that much.
Probably not. No.
No.
Don't talk about that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so the experience is, you know, Chromebooks, we used to talk about, well, you don't have, you know, like Photoshop, you don't have powerful tools to use, and they're just kind of limited to browser and the apps people make for the Chrome browser. This changes all of that because now you have apps that exist. So I hate to keep using this example, but Google used, and it's a pretty good one. They opened up the Photoshop app, Android app, on a Chromebook, edited a photo, saved it, then went into the Microsoft Word Android app on a Chromebook, and then, you know, typed out a document or whatever and inserted the image they just edited from the Android Photoshop app. And so you have all of these apps now to do everything. So like Wunderlist, all your to-do lists and all that stuff there, you have that app on your Chromebook now, and you get notifications from those apps. So if you have them installed and you have connectivity, you get notifications and all that stuff. You can have Instagram, the app, instead of the crappy web version, up running. One of the Google engineers said, you know, we didn't even think about this, but I had Facebook installed the other day on my Chromebook, and Chathead, you mentioned Chatheads earlier. He's like, and Chathead just popped up and was like floating there and working. He's like, we didn't even think about that. And that was working. So you get access to all of your favorite apps, but then you still have computer form. I mean, the Mac we're recording the show on, like, I don't have access to all those apps. You know what I mean? I have to use browser tabs for a lot of that stuff. So I just think it makes for what could be a really, really cool experience where you get that mix of mobile, tablet, and computer, which I think might sort of blend together what we've always wanted from a tablet, right? We liked tablets initially because they were a bigger screen, we could get more done, and then that experience just never really came together. On a Chromebook, that could now, because you have the computing software of Chrome OS with the mobile software of Android. It's fascinating. I think it's going to be amazing. I can't wait to just get it up and running just to see if it's everything that I think it's going to be. So,
yeah, I mean, we usually can't like blog on a Chromebook. So hopefully this will help that.
Might change some of that. I might be able to ditch my MacBook Pro when we go travel. We'll see.
That'd be huge.
Because I do. I mean, the Pixel is still just a beautiful damn device. So
I agree.
We did run a poll, though, about this. We asked readers, will you buy a Chromebook once they get Android apps? And 65% of them actually said yes.
Wow.
Yeah, but so one of the cool things is, right, well, Android tablets have almost been dead for a while now, right? Like Samsung still makes them, and Google has one here or there, and they just had, you know, announced the Pixel C fairly recently. But they're kind of hard to find, but when you do, they're either expensive or garbage. You can go buy a Chromebook for under $300. I mean, I think the flip that we got you has like 4 gig RAM and 16 gig storage or something like that, but it has SD slot and it has a touchscreen, all this stuff. It's basically a nice little tablet, type specs, except it's $280 or something like that, which is crazy. So
yeah, it's nothing crazy. The resolution isn't like crazy, like a Pixel, but it's still, I mean, totally functional as a device, should be at least.
Yeah. And I would just imagine, assuming this be, well, obviously now the Chromebook sales are clearly taking off, and they're adding this sort of functionality, I could see hardware makers get more invested in building out Pixel devices that have detachable displays that you just mentioned and sort of really creating this really cool Chromebook ecosystem. So.
All right. I hate to do this to you, but FedEx is here and I can't have packages left on my doorstep.
It's a Pixel or it's a Chromebook.
Exactly. So I'll be right back.
I'll just talk with readers amongst myself. All right. So Tim really is running off to go grab a package right now. Let's look at comments. Yeah, so somebody said, I mean, we talked about the sales, and somebody said they're probably factoring Chromebooks for education, and they probably totally are, but they're just talking overall PC sales and how many they've sold. So the one thing to keep in mind, too, with Chromebook sales being up there and overtaking Apple is the whole industry in general is kind of going down, so who knows how much that's saying, although they did leapfrog Macs, and I think Apple likes to talk about how many MacBooks they sell because it seems like that's what everyone buys these days.
All right, we got it.
Oh, Tim's back. Oh, there it is. In the house.
Live unboxing. It's not on Periscope either.
Hell with Periscope.
Yeah. Who uses that still?
Is that really the Chromebook? It must be, right? The flip?
It has to be. Not expecting anything else.
That's true. Ooh. It's nice timing, though. Mine showed up right before the show. I know you're very good here as well.
Come on, baby. Yeah, just like you, though. Total struggles opening the
total
box.
Total struggles, yeah. I pulled out the knife and still couldn't get the damn thing out. I'm just packing those things tight. Asus flip.
Asus in search of incredible Chromebook. So, yeah. Thank you, FedEx.
Yeah. So, Tim and I both have Chromebooks now. Should be interesting. Yeah. Obviously, we're not going to use them much. We'll use them some, but until the Android app stuff comes, and that's, again, not till mid-June. But anyway, it just seems like a big deal. I'm excited about that.
I totally agree. Super excited. Oh, this thing is cute. Sorry, we're actually doing a live unboxing, just so everyone knows.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, here it is. Little guy. We got that Chrome logo up there in the top, and then we are going to open it up and remove the little protection thing. So yeah, here it is. It looks like a little baby MacBook.
All right, let's see the flip. Let's see it fold.
Okay,
here don't comes break the it.
Right. What? Now it's a tablet.
Oh, it's a tablet.
What a trip.
Yeah, see, so this is kind of what I'm talking about, right? Like, these are all convertible devices. So Windows has been trying to do this, right? With their laptops with Windows 10 and stuff like that. And so, yeah, you basically have a Chromebook that runs Chrome OS, but then with Android apps, it becomes a tablet if you want it to be.
Definitely.
That looks pretty thin. I mean, I know you flipped it, and it's kind of weird once it's fully flipped backwards, but it still was fairly thin, right? You could port that thing around your house.
It's definitely not as thick as I thought it was going to be. And it's actually very thin, I will say. But like you said, it's got the micro SD slot. Not even like a full-size SD card, which is nice. It's got a whole bunch of buttons. It's got, just like a tablet, it has a power button, volume rocker on the side. It's a cute little thing.
Look at that little guy.
It's so cool. I can't wait to try it out.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right, so live unboxing done.
Done, thank you.
Let's talk some of the fun stuff that happened on the very last day. So Google's ATAP team, which is the team that does all the crazy technological things, they did their session. I don't know why they saved this for the last day, maybe just to keep people interested in the last day, but they announced, well, they had updates on three of their projects, I should say. So Project Soli, Project Aura, and Project Jacquard. And all of this stuff was pretty fun. But is it safe to say that Soli kind of, we both just kind of went, whoa, that's cool. Soli being the radio sort of movement sensor. I don't really know how you describe that. Do you want to talk about Soli?
Yeah, sure. Project Soli. All it is it's Google trying to minimize the size of radar sensors. So radars, these huge things that detect airplanes miles away, has now been minimized to a very small sensor. So if you put it, say, on the front of a smartwatch and you move your hand towards it, radar detects this movement, and then you can start interacting with the smartwatch without even touching it, using air gestures. That's enough to blow your mind right there, right?
Right.
And not only are we talking about it, but Google was showing it off. It's a real thing.
Right.
And people's minds were blown.
Yes.
People were going crazy. There weren't riots or anything, but people seemed excited. So
we were watching this thing going, oh my God, it's working.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, the fact that they made it so small, it looks at just like sort of like the base of a smartwatch where the links will be connected to the actual base itself, the head or the face. So the way they showed it off, when you sort of pinch and twist or sort of rotate the wrist with your fingers touching each other, it scrolls through, say, different apps or complications or text that you're viewing. So instead of hindering what you're seeing by actually touching on the display, you're just twisting the air in front of you and you can see all of the text, and it doesn't block any of the view of your already tiny display on your wrist. That's huge.
Awesome. Watching the guy do it, he's going, well, first of all, Google said,
it looks so smooth.
Last year we built this prototype and it was really big and it consumed all this power. And they said, so our goal was to get it small enough to see what we could do. And they got it small enough that they could fit it into a watch and so that it just sips power. And then they put it in an LG watch or Bane or something. And then they put it in small enough that they actually could show, and they created a simple little UI, but it was awesome.
I mean, is that not the future? I mean, I hate, for example, on the Huawei watch that I've been using, anytime as soon as I touch the screen, it's got fingerprints all over it. And I know a few watches are like that. Some aren't like that. It just really depends on sort of like the sapphire crystal or whatever they're using. So the fact that I don't have to, say, in the future, years from now, when this is actually available, if I don't have to touch the display and instead I can just like gesture what I want to do, it really kind of changes the game. Mm-hmm. So I can't wait. That was maybe the most exciting sort of like futuristic thing they showed off there. Pretty much everything from the ATAP team was really cool this year. Mm-hmm. I'm not huge on the next thing you're probably going to talk about, Jacquard,
right?
Project Jacket.
It's probably the least cool, but yes.
Yeah. But other than that, Project Soli looking real cool.
They didn't necessarily announce that it's coming soon or anything. I think they're going to just ask more developers to figure things out. But if they could create an actual consumer product of this, that's a watch. I mean, the watch idea makes sense. They obviously said we could build this into other things. I don't know any of those off the top of my head, but you could.
Right. So the other way they showed up Project Soli was a Bluetooth speaker. And they actually had it. They partnered with JBL to make it. And so when you go, you place your hand up towards the speaker. You don't touch it. You just place your hand in front of it. But then you can sort of up the volume, or you can skip tracks, turn it off, all by doing these simple hand gestures. Although they have a huge developing problem with a speaker due to that it is a radar-based technology inside of a speaker, which is a box that rumbles and shakes and pushes air out from it with the speaker. So there's a few hurdles to overcome. But, you know, given it's Google and they're working with JBL, I'm sure they'll be able to figure something out to where they can make it sort of like a viable technology. That's the type of stuff that really excites me about Google I.O. Not so much like, ooh, Google Allo and Duo or Assistant and all this stuff. Like this, like future stuff, very forward thinking. super exciting.
Well, and the fact that when these teams do this and then they go for, because they introduced this, all of these that we're going to talk about for the first time, well, maybe not Aura, but the other two last year for the first time. And this year, Jacquard, which is next, actually have a product that's going to be released. And these guys created this down to a smartwatch design and worked the JBL. I forgot about that, to create the speaker. So they've created a couple of different like actual products already. You can't buy these. These are still, you know, work in progress, but like, it's cool. I mean, if you haven't watched the ATAP session yet from Google I/O, it's only an hour long. Go watch it. It's just one of those things where you go, wow, that's awesome. And you know, the guys on the ATAP team are really kind of out there a little bit. They're goofy. They're
funny. Funky.
They're funky. You know, you can tell they've got some weird minds, but which are brilliant, but like, they do some goofy stuff. So definitely go watch that.
On the so if you go to atap.google.com/Soli, they have a real cool, like, how does it work? And it actually sort of shows it materializes the actual theory that is Soli. So for example, like, you can't actually see, you know, the interaction. It's all radar, and then that information that is being taken in by the radar is then translated into code, essentially, for a computer to interpret. So, but it's really cool. They show off a few, like, a way to materialize the thought. And so they actually show a gesture of someone just rubbing their hands and what it actually looks like to the computer of your hand doing that. That's real cool. Some cool stuff. Highly recommend you check out the site. And from there, you can also, like, sign up for notifications on new developments and stuff.
Yeah. So it's still cool. Probably the least exciting, at least to you and I, is the next one. It was Project Jacquard. And it's basically weaving in electronics into, like, clothing, like in your shirt or your jeans or a backpack or something. And so then you can, like, swipe across them, tap, whatever, and then it interacts and you connect it to a smart device or whatever, and you can make things happen. So, what they've done, so last year they showed it off in sort of cloth form and they connected it to some things and showed how it works. This year they partnered with Levi's and actually created a trucker jacket that you'll be able to buy next year. So these things just take time to fully materialize, but they created a trucker jacket. You'll be able to buy it. We don't know how much it's going to cost or anything, but it's, again, not that cool for me, but their big idea was it's a trucker jacket built for the bike commuter. And essentially they would connect this smart jacket to their smartwatch or smartphone, I mean, that's, you know, in their bag or something. As they're rolling around, they can swipe on their arm, change tracks, get directions, all of that stuff without ever actually looking at anything. So pretty cool stuff. And it's one of those things, we'll see if it, you know, it gets adopted and all that. One of the interesting things is, there's a sort of a dongle connected to the arm, which can detach, which is all the electronic part of it. And so if you take that off, you can then actually throw the jacket in the washer and watch it with the smart patch still on there, because it's just woven into the fabric. So kind of cool that you can have smart clothing that you just treat like your normal clothing, get it dirty, get it wet, whatever. So.
Yeah, definitely a hipster's wet dream for sure. The whole bike messaging jacket and whatnot. Definitely cool. I'm not, like, as excited about Jacquard as I am, say, Soli or ATAP or Aura or something from the ATAP team. It's definitely cool. Just be cool if it wasn't like a Levi's jean jacket that only someone north of the border would wear. That's just my opinion, though. It's not a, yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. So anyways, that's Project Jacquard. Same thing. I think you go to atap.google.com and probably find out more about that too.
Yeah.
The third thing, which they gave us an update about, even though I don't think Project Aura is a part of ATAP anymore, is it? Didn't they say it's basically graduated to its own thing?
Right.
So Project Aura, as you guys remember, modular phone, little modules, slide them into a board basically, and you can do whatever with your phone. So we've kind of been wondering what's going on with it. We actually thought it was maybe just gone forever because we just hadn't heard much in a while, but they actually announced a pretty big update to it. So they have it's coming to developers this fall, and then they plan to release a consumer device in 2017. They didn't say early, late, middle. They just said in 2017. But what they announced was a new board. So they have a new board, which this kind of disappointed some people. It includes the processor, RAM, and battery, I think. Where is that? I should just know that off the top of my head. Apparently, I didn't write that. Oh, it contains CPU, GPU, antennas, sensors, battery, and the display. So I think the initial vision we all had was hot swapping processors and batteries and displays. Yeah. But to make this a consumer device, I guess Google just maybe thought that's never going to be a reality. And well, so
never is a long time.
Yeah. So not now anyway, if they want to make a consumer device. So all that stuff in there. Yes. So you'll buy essentially a frame, right? That has the display, you pick your resolution, whatever, CPU, GPU, battery, all that in there already. But then you can still swap out, at least what they're showing is, you know, camera modules, speakers, and that's kind of it. I'm not sure. Well, they've showed one that's a secondary sort of e-paper like display that shows the weather on the back. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could slap in a module that's a button or something that could launch your camera or something. I mean, you know, there's definitely some different ideas there, but they also created a new design. It looks sleeker than ever. Looks cooler than ever. I think I got to admit, I'm a little disappointed at the fact that you can't just hot swap out a display.
Yeah, it's definitely cooler than the G5 yes, in terms of like module swapping. Like, these are actual modules. These I mean, the fact that you can modules. Slap in a camera or slap in like a high-grade microphone. So if you want to do one of the examples they showed with someone who was recording a guitar, an acoustic guitar, mm-hmm. that stuff is really cool. And mm-hmm. a lot of people I see are sort of like, oh, I can't upgrade the RAM or processor, then what's the point? It's like, I mean, this is just the first step, right? It's already yeah. taken them a long time to get this far. Obviously, yeah. this is not the easiest thing to do, and they're working with a ton of third parties on this. And Toshiba is the one that keeps coming to mind, but there is actually a ton. They had a huge list. So obviously, a lot of work being done, and this is what they got so far. It's not like this is it forever. I'm sure more things will come in the future, but for now, I think this is a really good start, and I'm excited about it. I don't know if this will be like my next phone or anything like that, even though consumer right. phones coming next year, but it's still exciting. Like, I'm not someone who's like
getting somewhere, right? I feel like we've yeah. been in this holding pattern forever on is Aura ever going to actually come? Is Google just going to ditch it? What's going on? Everyone left the team that was initially there.
Right. We've been in limbo for quite a while in terms of like when consumers could expect it. So now that we've actually got some solid intel from Google on what's going on, I'm excited.
Yeah. And they did show some cool things during the demo and update of it. Like they attached, we're talking actual hot swapping. They attached a camera module to a device that was on, clipped it in because it has this new sort of latching mechanism to hold these modules in place. And before they were just sort of using currents and magnets, I think, weren't they? Now they're actually latching on there. So they snapped it on, hit the camera app, and it fired up the camera, took some pictures, whatever. So the hot swapping thing is going to be a real deal, obviously, depending on the item. And then you eject modules to get them off, and you can do it through an app, or they actually showed the guy say, okay, Google, eject the camera, and it just popped off without him having to touch it, which was actually pretty cool.
That was legit.
It was pretty cool. Yeah, it was just another one of those cool demos that ATAP team did.
ATAP stole the show at IO this year.
They really did do some cool stuff. But, you know, like they're doing different colors and different textures on modules. You get wood covers, probably fabric, and just soft touch plastic. So they're really trying to do some cool things with design. You can really make a phone yours, and then we'll just see what happens with modules and all that once we get closer to a consumer launch. But they were still basically begging manufacturers and developers to come build things with them. So I think we're a long ways away from there being hundreds of modules for you to buy and add on to these things, but as long as they launch with more than three or whatever LG did and then backtrack down to one, I think it'll be a success.
I agree. It's so, better than the G5.
It's better than the G5, yes.
Sorry, LG. Poor LG. I'm not going to let you get away with what you did.
So that was ATAP. They it was cool. I mean, it was one of those things. It was the last day and we weren't even actually at IO. We were just at our hotel room, just kind of writing the stuff up, getting ready to leave San Francisco, and just sat there watching it going, wow, that was pretty sweet. And then we were sitting around waiting for the ATAP video to get posted, because we were just like, if you didn't see this, you need to watch. And then they finally did. Thank you. Yeah. Let's see. So in other updates, Android Wear 2.0 was announced. And it's only in preview, so Stable is coming again in the fall or sometime later this year. It is available as a preview, though, for the Huawei Watch or LG's Watch Urbane LTE second edition or whatever the hell it's called. And we flashed on a Huawei Watch today, posted a video of that if you want to see hands-on with it. It's definitely different than what it used to be. It's not that sort of card style. They've taken away some swipe gestures and really put emphasis on using the button, the hardware button, to go back or jump into apps and stuff. So if you do flash it, you're going to have to get used to navigating it a little bit. But apps can work standalone in some instances. There's a keyboard now, and you can actually write out words with your finger too to send messages. And then complications are a big deal and new watch faces coming and all this stuff. So they announced a whole bunch of new stuff that isn't quite ready for public consumption, but it might make Android Wear better. I can't tell you right now if it, in the time that I've spent with the preview today, if I'm just going, you know, running to a smartwatch now to play with Wear, but they're still working on it, trying to make it a much better product.
Which is good. I think people were... On the comments on the announcement post, we were like, oh, I hope my OG Moto 360 gets this. Yeah, you better, yeah, that fingers crossed for you. But I think it looks cool. I mean, Google is saying it's the biggest update for the platform yet. Mm-hmm. Although at the same time, everything that I saw from it, I don't see it as really being all that game-changing for the platform itself. Like, being able to handwrite on my baby screen is not cool. Like, I'm sorry, Project Soli just showed me that I can interact with it using air gestures, and now you want me to actually use my finger on the screen that I don't right. want to touch in the first place to write text?
Right.
Like, I get that it can be more intuitive than talking to it in a time that may not be appropriate, like if you're in a movie or something, like you can't say, oh, okay, I'll see you later, looking right. like Dick Tracy over here. Like, I get it. It's cool. You could write on it, but I don't want to touch it at all. I want to be able to write in the air. Like, wouldn't that's that be awesome? Cool. That'd be so awesome. While all this is cool, I love the stuff that they did with the complications and opening up APIs like that, where an app can add a complication to an existing watch face. I think that's cool. I'm all for complications and cooler watch faces, because that's what I primarily use my Android smartwatch, my Android Wear watch, to be a watch. I wanted to have nice looking watch faces and cool complications. So that stuff is good. Don't care about handwriting on it. Not really huge on better music controls and stuff. I don't use my watch for music, although I know a lot of people do with Bluetooth headsets and stuff. Yeah. More power to you. For me, I don't see this as being the biggest update for the platform yet. And that's quoted. I mean, that's what they said. That so they said. It's cool. Not that cool, Google. Yeah.
We'll see once it gets more polished. My only issues with it right now are really the UI's look. It used to be really easy to figure out what you were looking at and doing because it was white cards, right? It was just white card after card. Now it's all special material colors all blended together into screens. And so it's going to take some getting used to, for sure.
Yeah. My hot take is Google sort of like outdoing, you know, what the platform should be. Really, I mean, you know, are they overcomplicating? Is Google overcomplicating Android Wear? Yes, absolutely. I think they might be. So we'll
just
see.
Just kill Android Wear and start back over with this right here. We'll gesture. Gestures. Whoop. That's it.
Yep. I don't care how much it has. I mean, I get it. Like, the watch will probably have to be $500 a pop plus.
Right.
That's fine for an awesome experience. You know, you expect to play. Expect to pay. So yeah.
Let's see. All right. So outside of Android Wear, there's actually some pretty big Android Auto news. Number one, Google is this is actually funny. They're reintroducing car mode on the phone. You remember the car mode app? Basically, it was the car app and you just opened it and it turned your phone into a car UI sort of thing. Yeah. They're reintroducing that. And they're basically saying Android Auto is coming to your phone, which is really silly because really all they're doing is they just recreated the car app. Anyway, so that's coming soon. And it'll just come through an update to the Android Auto app. And it basically puts Android Auto in everyone's car instead of needing a car with a, you know, navigation system and all that. You can basically just hit the Android Auto app, dock your phone on, you know, a holder or something, and you sort of get that simple car UI, which is cool. It seems like this should have happened from day one, honestly. They also announced that Waze is finally coming to Android Auto, which is cool. Hot wording, so you can say, okay, Google, navigate wherever, and it'll do that. Car manufacturers like Honda and Hyundai are bringing more like specific apps and things like that. And then one of the cool things they actually did was they showed off a concept. They took a Maserati and worked with Qualcomm and created this concept where they put a 15-inch 4K display, sort of like in the spot where you see on Teslas that have the giant display. 15-inch 4K display, and it was broken up into 720p clusters so they could show like your notifications and your music controls and navigation or whatever. And then you could even control like the HVAC system in the car and things like that. And that sort of continued over to the sort of instrument panel with your speed limit, and it would show you navigation and things like that. It was very cool. It's not coming to a car near you anytime soon. It was basically Google just saying, if we took over the whole infotainment system, this is kind of what it would look like from us. And of course, they just went crazy and did it in a Maserati, which was nice.
And the bezels are sort of ridiculous. I get that it's a concept, yeah. But it's not the hottest looking concept I've ever seen.
No, I mean, it's a concept. Let's just put it there.
So. Definitely cool. Although, I mean, so I guess, you know, that probably is the future, right? Like everything's just going to go to touchscreen controls and et cetera, et cetera. I guess I just miss what cars used to be, you know, just pure, like just an engine. Purist. Yeah. An engine and some knobs. Like I want my heater on and just turn grease. On. I like, yeah. I mean,
and some fingertip gloves.
That's right. All that is cool. This is cool too. It's just, it's going to be expensive and it's going to take a long time. And the whole turning Android Auto into an app that just used to be like the Google Car app or whatever. I mean, it's sort of like, it's like, I want to say it's not very forward thinking. It's not very Google, but
that's what I'm saying. It should have been, we should have had the car mode the day they introduced it. It should have been Android Auto. Here's the new Android Auto app. And oh, guess what? It also connects to your car if you want to do it there. That's what it should have been. I don't know why it took them like 3 years to return car. I mean, we had car mode what back with the OG Droid. I'm pretty sure there was a car back then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that it returns and they're making this huge deal out of it.
Yeah, definitely. I see this as being the future for sure. And not too distant either. You know, like 2020, more cars coming with these just huge display panels. I mean, I don't see why not. Just make sure all you car companies that are listening, make sure that your displays are highly responsive. You know, like I don't want to tap three times on something. I want it to be fast. And I saw someone mention in the comments that Google needs to team up with NVIDIA with their car concepts and all that. NVIDIA is doing a lot of cool stuff, and it would be cool. And I'm sure Google is actually working with NVIDIA on a few things. Although this specific concept, Kenlin said, was with Qualcomm, but NVIDIA is doing a lot of stuff, and all these companies just really need to get together. I understand that they all want to make money and all that fun stuff, but for the consumer people, it would be good that if they all just got together and made like an industry standard is what I think is needed. Some type of standard and allow everyone to get in on it.
Stop thinking they know how to do electronics and technology, because they don't.
Software. They don't know how to do software. Like, they know cars, right. So they can make the engines, allow Silicon Valley to provide the software, because they get it.
Right? Yeah, but we also need non-car manufacturers to put in good displays that you were just talking about, because every car has a garbage display with lag, no touch sensitivity, all that stuff.
And the UIs are just always terrible. Like, the infotainment system that my Nissan came with is just, it's crap. I hate it. So, and yeah, like the capacitive touch display is garbage.
Yeah, they're always just trash.
Yeah. So there's a lot that can be done. Mm-hmm. So I like what Tesla really kind of did for this space, the auto space. They sort of just brought this new way of looking at the interior of a car, and I dig it. So
for sure.
Although, but like I said previously, not to go against what I just said 5 minutes ago, where I like knobs and I like, you know, buttons and gadgets and stuff. So,
got to find a good mix, I guess.
That's what I mean. You need to find a good mix. So Google has this, just, it's a slate. The whole thing is just a slate. I would have liked to see something a bit different. That's just me, though.
Yeah. All right. So Android TV also had some announcements and new partners and things like that. You want to update us on Android TV?
Yeah, I would love to pull up the old notes here. So basically, they said that there are changes coming for the platform, but then they sort of gave an outline where people can find Android TV in the new year. So, of course, you can find Android TV in new TV sets that are coming from Sony, as well as RCA. So both of those companies, pretty sure they showed off what was coming at CES. But in addition, we have new set-top boxes coming from Sharp, as well as Xiaomi. And the Xiaomi Mi Box, I think that's how it's printed, the Mi Box. So, yeah. Not my box, just Mi Box.
I think it's a Mi Box, yeah.
Supports 4K, 60 frames per second, so a lot like Shield Android TV. This, I believe, will only be the second 4K set-top Android TV box, so that's a big deal. It comes with Dolby Digital Plus, so you're going to have some good audio and, of course, good video. And the changes for Android TV, the platform, Google says there will be picture-in-picture. So while you are searching for new content to sort of watch, you can still have your picture going of, say, live TV or whatever it is else you're doing. So picture-in-picture, that's been around on TVs for quite some time. Nothing too new. Recording APIs, so you can record live television. So your Android TV box is essentially turning into a DVR, which is fantastic. And then HDR viewing, so high dynamic range, meaning a richer picture quality from services that offer HDR. And as of right now, the only ones I know of would be Netflix. I believe Amazon might offer a couple of titles that like include like HDR video, and then a few gaming. So that's what NVIDIA did for Shield TV. They brought HDR gaming, so just a better picture quality for game stream and Netflix. So that's it. You got three big things: picture in picture, recording APIs, and high dynamic range from certain services. So not huge, but definitely good. Nothing, not the biggest update for the platform ever or anything like that.
I think one of the big things is, you know, the Xiaomi Mi Box coming, because it's coming to the U.S. And, you know, they don't really sell anything. I think you buy the Mi Band, their little fitness band here. Yeah. Obviously, none of their phones and tablets and stuff really come here. So I think people are looking at that because they think that means Xiaomi is actually coming to the U.S. with everything soon. And they might be. But this is a fully fledged box that should, yeah, basically compete with Shield. I think everyone's also hoping that it's super cheap because most of their stuff is sold at ridiculously low prices. If it's coming to the US, though, we don't know if that will be the case. Right. I don't know if they've announced pricing. So,
yeah, I don't think so.
All right. And then in other sort of quick news, let's see. So one of the things Google showed off was this thing called Android Instant Apps. So Instant Apps, essentially you can run an app without ever installing it. So the idea here, and this is also not coming for a little while, you Google something and one of the search results that pops up is that of an app. And so you tap on that app instead of tapping on that, going to the Google Play Store, installing it, and then hoping it pops you up into the right portion of that app. You will now just be able to tap on that and the app will load, like the actual app. And so they're calling it Instant App because you don't have to install it. So you can use a portion of the app, and there will be a button, you know, to install it if you do want to go forward and make it an app on your phone. But it's cool because obviously some people just create apps or their app experiences are better than their web experiences. And so you may want to get into the app, but you don't want to have it installed, and it makes sense. So what they're saying is developers have to modularize their apps. So break everything down into segments so that if they are searched for, you can instantly pull that portion of the app up. And this, again, this is a, almost like a full app experience, but just broken down into segments. So they're working with some developers now, like B&H Photo, to make this happen. But it's not going to be a big rollout for a while. Like, they're clearly still in the early stages of this because they didn't want to really just open it up for everyone to start taking advantage of it. But it's a pretty cool deal. I guess it's game changing. I mean, how often are you, do you search for something and you click on the link to open an app? I don't know that I do that a lot, but
yeah, it's definitely cool. I think one of the examples they showed was like a BuzzFeed video. So say if like an example or a search result was that specific video, but you can only get that video from inside of the app, like it instantly loads the app, then it only loads the, you know, the section that has the video. I mean, that it's cool. Like, a lot of people were very excited about it. I guess I just didn't share the same excitement, I guess, because I'm stuck in the world where I have to download an app for everything that I want. And like, I'm cool with apps. I already thought apps are pretty intuitive little applications to get what you want. So I get, and since we are such quite a long ways away, more sort of use cases will be exampled by Google and these creators. But then this announcement actually builds on something that Google already has for advertisements. So you're already into a game and then an ad pops up for another game, and then you can actually test run that game without actually downloading anything. Same concept, just that these are apps and not advertisements for games that you can download.
Yeah.
So definitely cool. But I just get this weird feeling, like an icky feeling, that it's about advertisements and not necessarily like enriching a user's experience.
I think one of the areas that'll be really big is shopping online.
Right.
When you're on your phone, going to a website to shop is usually a terrible experience.
Yes.
But a lot of times apps are obviously built for that. So you could find something, tap on the app, open up that section of the app, and then with Android Pay built in, buy it, like basically the snap of a finger, get out of there, never install the app, never go to the crappy website, never pull out your credit card because you have Android Pay. So I think for shopping, it could be a really big deal. I'll just have to be convinced of other uses. But again, it's not coming for a while. They said we've just started working on, or we've been working on this. It's not really ready. This is what it could be, though. So
yeah, definitely. This was created by Google's ad department, in my opinion.
Probably. Let's see. So in other news, Google in July, actually starting July 2nd, they're going to introduce family libraries for sharing paid apps. So this is a pretty big deal. If you have a family set up, you know, like the Google Play Music family account, and you have multiple families on a credit card for buying apps or whatever, they're going to introduce family sharing. So developers don't have to opt into this, but I get the feeling Google is trying to get them to. So starting July 2nd, every app you buy becomes a part of your family group, unless the developer just kind of opts out of it. But that means if your mom buys an app and then you, a couple days later, say, oh, I really want to buy this app, and your mom's already bought it, you can then install it without having to pay extra, which is cool. And Google's trying to get developers to sort of backdate all of this. So it means on July 2nd, when this goes live, if you know you bought an app 6 months ago and tomorrow or July 3rd, your sister wants that same app, she should just be able to install it unless these developers don't opt in. So anyway, it could save your family potentially quite a bit of money if everyone's buying the same apps.
Yeah, I don't see why developers would be for this idea.
I don't see it why either.
Yeah, like there might be some apps where this works, and maybe not even apps, but like movies, right? Like if I want to share my movie library with someone in my family, that makes more sense to me. But an app, I don't think they gave enough examples in general.
Yeah, right. They didn't, because I was wondering the same thing about movies and things like that, and they weren't really straightforward with that. So
The point is, why would a developer want to have someone be able to share a license for an app when they want to get paid for that app? You know, that's money they're losing out on.
I agree. I guess it's just something you can opt into, but I'm with you. I don't necessarily see a bunch of people opting into it.
Yeah, I guess we shall see.
Yep. So Google also announced that Google Play beta tests will finally be easy to join and leave and all of that stuff. So they're going to start listing public betas in Google Play. So you could go, if Nova Launcher is doing a public beta, you could search for Nova Launcher beta, find it, join it, install the beta, instead of having to like go to the Google Plus group and find a link to opt in to then go find Google Play and the link. And it's, instead of it being a pain in the ass, it should actually be pretty easy going forward, which will be, and that's actually rolling out now, I believe, to some people. So
that's definitely cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Such a pain to find betas.
Yeah.
Gotta have that specific link.
I think that's pretty much it from IO. We've been talking about it for an hour and a half, so
that's a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't want to say the big takeaway from IO, but obviously Google used this as a developer and a preview show. They obviously got developers working. They made this a 3-day event again so they could get more sessions in, more developers in. They moved venues to a bigger venue to get more developers in again. And then they just showed a bunch of stuff that says, look, we're working on this, build cool stuff for it, because it's going to be ready in a few months, which I think is actually a pretty cool way of going about it. It's just, we all want that instant satisfaction, right? So we all want new products now. We want to spend money now. We want to play with stuff now. But basically what Google did was, developers, check all this cool stuff out we're working on. Let's see how much cooler you can make it in the next like 3 or 4 or 5 months when we get real products ready. So, I mean, there's lots of fun stuff to talk about, but yeah, it's tough not to walk away feeling a little saddened by the fact that we don't have new toys to play with.
Yeah, we always want new toys, and definitely another year where Google didn't really give anything out to attendees, which was, it's a big deal for attendees.
Oh, yeah. So they didn't give anything to attendees. Well, shouldn't say didn't give anything. They gave us cardboard and sunglasses and a water bottle, and then
sunscreen.
The actual developers in attendance are getting, I think it's a $500 credit to like Google's cloud services or whatever for your app, right? And another couple hundred to something else. So basically, if you're building an apps, they're giving you credit to keep building apps and use their services. But yeah, there was no like new Pixel, or you didn't get a Nexus 6P or something like that. So they didn't give out toys like that, but they did give developers stuff they can still probably use.
Good. All right. That's a good thing. As long as developers are getting something for attending, I'm down for that.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it. That's Google I.O. 2016. Nice. Lots of stuff, which will get awesome soon. Trust us. It's going to be like August is going to hit, and it's going to be nuts.
Oh, it's going to be huge.
Yeah, it's going to be nuts. So yeah. All right. Do you want to talk about an app real quick?
Yeah. I just wanted to talk about Dark Sky. There's been so much drama. It's a weather app. I'm sure by now most of you have heard of Dark Sky. It released on a subscription model. Every year you pay $3 to use this app. So if you think to yourself, well, am I really going to be getting enough usage out of this app, you know, for $3 a year? Should I be paying for it? Should I not be paying for it? Let me tell you. So you get 2 weeks of free usage. So before you even pay a dime. So try it out. It's actually really good. I was using it while I was down in San Francisco. I use it at home now every day. When I wake up every morning, I specify a time I want to be sent a forecast by Dark Sky. So every morning at 7:30, I am greeted by what the weather is looking like for that day, what the chance of rain is, et cetera, et cetera. For me, that's really helpful, especially in Northwest, where it rains quite frequently and sometimes sporadically, randomly. So try it out. There's been a lot of drama, people not thinking that they need to pay for things on the Android platform. I'm just telling you guys do need to pay for things. It's only $3, $2.99 a year. That's not even a penny a day. Come on, folks. It's a really good app. Again, I'll tell you, my favorite feature is this map feature. So you can actually see the storm, and it's not some janky like thing you'll see on Channel 5 News at 11 p.m., like the radar thing. You know, it's a really good map based on Google Maps API. You can zoom in, see the storm where it actually is, and it's a really cool app. I know Kellen will agree with me, right? Won't you?
It's a cool app. It's got its issues. It's black and white, so I kind of need some color. And I hate the way when I tap on notifications, they don't disappear. But otherwise, yeah, I have been using it, yeah.
There's a few bugs. Other than the few bugs, because it's a brand new app, I think it's pretty good. I think people will get $3 of usage from it. And I think that...
oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, I think people being upset that they'd have to pay a subscription to $3 is ridiculous. I mean, I pay, well, like $150 a month, you know, for access to TV channels. Mm-hmm. And I don't use that stuff as nearly as much as I use my smartphone. Yeah, exactly. So I guess if you want to keep getting your news from Channel 5 and their meteorologist who's not very good at his job, let's be honest. He's not very trustworthy. It always rains when he says it's going to be a sunny day. Don't listen to that guy. Like, just try out Dark Sky free for 2 weeks. And no, there's not like a referral code or anything, so you know I'm not getting paid. Just try it out. I
really love Dark Sky.
I do, you know, because I feel like I have to be, because I was someone who was like, I'm not going to pay $3 a year for a weather app. I just thought it was stupid.
Yeah, we talked about it the other week and you were just like, stupid weather app. There's so many. Who would pay for that crap?
Yeah, I could just Google. I can just Google Portland weather and there's my $3 saved. But in actuality, Dark Sky is pretty cool. I like that it's sort of the minimalist black and white monochromatic look. And I really dig that map view. I just like that. I like that it's topographical and you can kind of see like the mountain range and stuff. Anyway, definitely Dark Sky. If you haven't checked it out already, 2 free weeks of usage, and then you can just cancel your subscription if you don't like it. So worth the $3. Do it.
Tim approved, folks.
Yeah, Tim approved. Doesn't get much better than that.
Like David in the chat, just use your Google opinion drawers. Actually, I don't think you can. I don't think you can use those for subscriptions, can you?
Yeah,
it's a subscription model, so I don't think you can do that.
Yeah, I don't think you might be able to, actually. I'm
telling you, it's one of those things that you'll pay for the $3 and you'll forget all about it, and then in a year you'll see it pop up and charge you $3 and you'll go, oh yeah, that's right, the subscription, it's cool, I like this app. Like, that's what's gonna happen, and no one's gonna care.
I hope so.
It's just the initial getting on in there, but whatever. Yeah,
I had this idea that maybe after a year, someone will only have like $2.50 in their bank account, and Dark Sky is going to be the app that overdrafts them. And then,
so sad.
Yeah.
I would hope it would just fail instead of overdrafting them on $2.50.
It depends, man. But yeah.
All right. Anything else?
That'll do it for me. It's only Monday. I keep thinking I'm gone for the weekend, but nope, I'm here all week.
It is a long week ahead. Although this weekend is 3-day weekend.
For what?
Memorial Day weekend. Yeah.
We get Memorial Day off?
Of course we do.
Oh, we're humans. Yeah.
We may do a show this Friday too, though, just to send it into the weekend. We got some other stuff to talk about, like Moto Z and all that coming up. So.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, thanks for joining us on this IO special, really, really long show. Hopefully you guys stuck with it, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, we're Droid Life. We're out of here.
Peace.